It's time for school. Rock School. With your hosts, Dr. Joe Burns.
How'd you like to have a name like that? Jimmy Greenspoon. My cousin Yellow Fork.
And Chad P.
So you can listen to a song and look at the person next to you and go, that's a Hammond B3. And they can look back at you and go, I don't care. Because that's what my wife.
Class is in.
Good afternoon, it's Rock School, once again broadcasting live before your naked steaming ears right here on the campus of Southeastern Louisiana University. My name is Joe Burns, a professor in the communication department. Sitting to my immediate right, a good friend and one who must learn. His name is...
Chad P!
Today we are going to put together an entire show off of a single interview that I read with the keyboardist of Deep Purple. His name was John Lord. John Lord, his main instrument was either the B3 or the C3 Hammond organ.
I gotta tell you, when you first told me we were gonna do a show on the Hammond organ, I thought it had something to do with this town.
No. It was invented It was invented in 1934 by Lawrence Hammond. But when you talk about instruments that can keep up with the guitar, the piano, and I'm taking a lot of this. Now, this isn't coming out of my head. A lot of this is coming out of this interview with John Lord, the keyboardist for Deep Purple. He made the statement that when a piano is in a band, a lot of the instrumentation has to be done around the piano.
Okay.
Simply because the piano doesn't have the same amount of sustain. Even when you put a microphone on a piano, even when you take the damper off the piano, that's one of those keys you push down, or one of those foot pedals you push down.
Yeah.
You hit those keys with everything you got, bang! It tends to die away very quickly.
It's boom and it's gone.
And it goes away. Mm-hmm. Whereas this Hammond organ, and by the way, the Hammond B3, that's the one. That's the one I'm really featuring today, the Hammond B3. Hammond made many different versions of their organ, but the Hammond B3, that's the one. If you're a blues player, if you're a heavy metal rock player, the B3 is the one you wanted. In fact, you're going to hear the B3. And the thing about it is, from song to song, from group to group, you're going to go, that's the same instrument? Yeah, because it's through different speakers, it's through different systems, it's through different effects, the dampers are different, the tone wheels are different, the draw bars, and I'll tell you what all these things are as the show goes on. You can make this instrument, just the same way you can do with a guitar, you can make this instrument sound different from song to song, from section of a song to section of a song. So when you hear Deep Purple's use of a B3, and then the use of a B3 in the next song we're going to play, you're going to go, that's not the same instrument. It's exactly the same instrument.
Well, good.
But getting back to John Lord, why was this organ so successful in rock and roll where the piano kind of fell away? You know, it was really big in early 1950s, but then kind of fell away. Now, there are people that play the piano, and by the way, we're going to feature the piano next week.
Oh, cool.
Why are there so many, you know, so many organs that took off and in heavy metal and such? Why? Sustain. When you took a Hammond B3 and you pushed that key, until you took your finger off of that key,
it made a
sound. That's right. That note drove. Mm-hmm. The same way as when you blew into a saxophone. As long as you blew air, it played. The guitar, as long as you hit it, it played. Sustain. According to John Lord, the godfather of heavy metal organ, or so said this article, as long as you held that key down, it played. You want to hear some?
I'd love to.
Highway Star, this is Deep Purple as we begin the whole run of the Hammond B3 for an hour on Rock School.
We'll be right back.
Lord of Deep Purple and the Highway Star. Love it. Now, you hear how down and dirty those things sound?
Yeah.
Yeah. And boom.
Boom.
Very fine. There's your Spinal Tap outro. John Lord is playing that Hammond B3. And by the way, it's hard to miss it. It looks like an organ like you'd find in your grandmother's house. It's got two sets of keys, one sitting on top of the other one. And it normally runs through what's known as a Leslie speaker. And I'm going to play a couple songs a little later on the show and tell you how a Leslie speaker works. It's made by a man named Leslie.
Does this organ have the thing whenever you hit the note, it's got a little deal that spins?
That's the Leslie speaker.
Okay, good.
And I'm going to tell you how to.
What we're talking about.
I'm going to tell you what the Leslie speaker is a little bit later on in the show.
Okay.
But the way he got the sound was running that organ through Marshall amplifiers.
Okay.
And actually using a guitar effect. He was running that organ through a distortion pedal.
Okay.
The same way you would run a guitar. So he was actually running this thing as the same way that Ritchie Blackmore, the guitarist for Deep Purple, was running his guitar.
Okay.
So that's how he was able to keep up and, again, sustain.
There was a lady that played one of these organs in a church that I grew up in. That's how I know that it had the Leslie speaker. I saw her left foot playing the distortion pedal, and then her right foot was going back and forth playing bass notes.
That's right.
Boom, boom. And I was going like, oh, it reminded me of one of those people that you saw in the cartoons that were playing a trumpet with their mouth and banging the drum, and doing the cymbal with their knees.
Funny you should talk about church.
Okay.
That's what the original Hammond organs were made for.
Okay.
They were a low-cost alternative to pipe organs, and they were widely used first, believe it or not, in military chapels and theaters during World War II, and were then picked up in African-American churches. And from the African-American churches, they were taken on by African-American jazz musicians.
Okay.
Jimmy Smith was one of the first people to actually use it, and from then made the jump over to blues musicians and then, of course, into rock and roll.
It's amazing when you look at the evolution of an instrument.
Sure,
this
and how
it
gets started, from one
to
the next.
This is how it got there. Unbelievable. You know, let me stump you right quick.
Sure.
What is the last show we did a spotlight on an instrument? Do you remember?
It was a drum show.
No.
What was
it? It was the cowbell.
Oh, it was the cowbell.
That was a long time
ago. Not that
ago.
That's an instrument. Now, listen, you heard how rough and tumble and grrr that actually was?
Yeah.
Let's listen to the Hammond B3 played through the Leslie speaker. When we get back, I'll tell you how the Leslie speaker works by a guy who's playing it nice and clean. This is who Ringo Starr claims is the greatest organ player in the world. He was also the first musical guest on Saturday Night Live, believe it or not. This is Billy Preston. Number one song from 1972. It starts with a little piano ditty, but then you'll hear the organ the rest of the way through it. Nice and clean, open keys the whole way through, played through the Leslie speaker. Will it go round in circles? Listen to the organ on Rock School.
I've got a song, I ain't got no melody. I'm gonna sing it to my friends. My friends, will it go round in circles? Will it fly high like a bird up in the sky? Will it go round in circles?
Beautiful harmonica work there, Billy Preston. By the way, he's also playing the bass guitar on that track as well.
Now?
Oh, yeah. That's from the album Music Is My Life. By the way, I kind of lied to you. I said he was the first musical guest on Saturday Night Live. Actually, it was Janis Ian, but he came out and accompanied her on the Hammond B3. So,
okay, I won't hold it against you.
Now, that was an organ being played through the Leslie speaker. Now, what exactly is the Leslie speaker? Think of it this way. If you took a speaker and then put this thing in front of it, this thing that was a damper, this barrel, and then you spun it.
Yep.
So when you put sound through it and it spun, yeah. it kind of did this in front of the speaker. I'm kind of moving my hand in front of it, and it gave a slight Doppler effect when it played.
Yeah.
That's generally how a Leslie speaker sounded. It kind of gave a slight vibrato to each. And I'll go into a little bit more detail on it with what is maybe the most famous or at least well-known introduction by a Hammond B3 organ ever, and we'll do that in 1 minute on Rock School. We're talking about the Hammond B3 organ today. If you hear an organ, and I mean an organ, something that sounds like it would be in church, more than likely in a blues song or a heavy metal song, you are more than likely listening to the Hammond B3 organ.
Question.
Yes.
The Hammond B3 organ, was there a B1 or a B2?
There were numerous different kinds. The B3, if I'm not mistaken, is the only B-level organ.
Okay.
There was the C3, and okay. then outside of that, different names. But
okay.
the B3 is really the big one. We're going to play a song a little later on by Journey with Greg Raleigh, who also played with Santana.
Mm-hmm.
And
Santana's everywhere nowadays on Rock School.
You're not kidding. But also, we're not going to play Santana. We're going to play the Journey version. But the song actually mentions the B3, which
okay.
is one of the reasons we're going to play it. He actually is mentioned specifically as playing the B3.
Wonderful.
We're going to play Procol Harum's Whiter Shade of Pale. And it is maybe the most famous introduction by a Hammond B3, if not the most famous. And it's played through this Leslie speaker invented by Donald Leslie. Think of it this way. You have two speakers, a treble unit, mm-hmm. a higher note unit,
yeah.
and a woofer, a lower note unit.
Right.
And in front of each of them is this spinning thing, this barrel that turns, and I'm going to move my hand in front of my mouth again, so you get this kind of little Doppler effect as I'm speaking. And what this does is gives this nice little effect, almost a phase shift, as I'm talking. And that's what the Leslie speaker gave. It was just this nice, I've stopped doing it now, it's just this nice little effect that set the speaker off from everything else.
Really good sound.
Let's talk about Whiter Shade of Pale. What in the world does Procol Harum mean? Believe it or not, it's a breed of cats.
What?
It really is. The man who was the manager of the band at the time said, you need a better name. So they looked at his cat and said, what kind of cat is that? And he said, it's a Procol Harum. Okay, well, we're now Procol Harum.
Wow.
If you take a spelling change aside, it actually means Latin for beyond these things. What does Whiter Shade of Pale mean? 16 Vestal Virgins, what have you? The guy who wrote the lyrics, his name is Gary Brooker.
Mm-hmm.
He stated that it means nothing. He took a lot of lyrics that he thought were very interesting, and he put them together. Really means nothing. He just wanted to write lyrics that he said sounded important.
Hmm.
Whiter Shade of Pale.
Not everybody's Don McLean.
That's
where they
right.
had meanings to lyrics and all this stuff. It rhymed. What rhymes with fudge?
Judge.
Exactly.
And
we
off
got
it
a
goes.
Song.
The man who's playing the organ, his name is Matthew Fisher. He was moved by Johann Sebastian Bach's Air on a G String. If you know the song, that's what basically gave the underlying theme to it. Procol Harum, Whiter Shade of Pale, the Hammond B3 organ through a Leslie speaker on Rock School. Okay, this is weird. Listen to where the fade starts. Listen. He'll begin. And now they do the fade. I've always wondered about that. Why would they start the chorus again and then do the fade right at... I've never understood that. I've always thought that was strange.
Again, not everything has to mean something.
I think it does, at least in the production aspect of it.
He could have done just like I did, because I totally didn't know you turned those mics on. I was so into this song, just kind of enjoying
it. Does calm you down.
And yeah, I'm very calm right now.
Three Dog Night, the keyboardist, organist, the Hammond B3 organist, is named Jimmy Greenspoon. How'd you like to have a name like that? Jimmy Greenspoon. My cousin Yellow Fork.
Right.
So there
that
you
go. That
won't
get you beat up in grade school at all.
This is from the album Suitable for Framing back in 1969. A lot of people look at Three Dog Night and they say, well, that's obviously from the Inuit concept of covering yourself with three dogs because it's a very cold night.
What?
That's what people normally say. It's not. It's from the Australian term for a very cold evening. It's not Inuit. It's Australian. So the next time somebody says, oh, that's an old Eskimo thing for three dogs on because it's a cold night. It's not. It's Australian.
You look at them and you say, that's an odd.
That's wrong. I listen to rock school. This is written by a woman named Laura Nyro, N-Y-R-O. And the only reason I'm telling you this is because I'm pitching a show that we're going to do a long way down. It's probably a month, 2 months away. She worked in a place called the Brill Building in New York City. During the 1970s, there was no piece of real estate where more hits came out of than the Brill Building. It housed about 15 different songwriters, including Lieber and Stoller and Carole King and, of course, Ms. Laura Nyro. There was no piece of real estate in the world, including Motown, that put out more hits than the Brill Building.
No
and I'm
going
to do a show on it. This one's by her. This one came out of the Brill Building. Listen to the organ. Specifically at the beginning, it's out of a Leslie speaker. Got a little bit of phase on it. It's a Hammond B3. Eli's coming. Three Dog Night on Rock School.
Eli's coming. Eli's coming.
Abruptly. Oh, I love that song. Eli's coming. It's Three Dog Night right here on Rock School. A little bit of piano as it fades out. That's actually in the single. If you have that on the album, that goes right into the next song. So that actually is
cool.
That's actually something that's left over from the album part. Hey, welcome to Half Past here on Rock School. Yeah, let's pitch the website to you. If you haven't gone there in a little bit, we haven't really pitched the website a bit because the last two shows were those cover shows and we didn't get to pitch the website. KSLU.org. Look for the chalkboard on the right, says Rock School. Click on it. Pictures of us, old shows in podcast formats, and by all means, download some of them, put them on your iPod, put the earbuds in, knock the rest of the world out, and learn a few things.
And then show off to your friends.
Show off to your friends. Show how smart you are.
That's
write
right.
us an email, too. We'd love to hear from you. Chad,
right.
what do we do?
Well, you go to KSLURockSchool@gmail.com. KSLURockSchool, one big long word, @gmail.com. We check our email every day.
Every day. If there is a man who plays keyboards and you say, hey, who plays keyboards? Steveland Wonder would be the person
right.
who played it. He was big on the Hammond. He actually played keyboards album to album to album, different kinds of keyboards. And on the album Songs in the Key of Life back in 1976, he was heavy, heavy into the Hammond B3. You don't find it much on other albums, but Songs in the Key of Life, all over the album.
Mm-hmm.
So you have a stump for me.
I do.
On Steveland Wonder.
I originally wanted to do, I remember watching a VH1 or it could have been an MTV documentary where he performed at one of these shows, maybe a Video Music Awards show.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, he made a cameo appearance with another star. And at the end, they left him on stage because
Will Smith. He came out and performed and everybody bowed and left. And he's sitting there smiling.
I couldn't find what event it was.
I can tell you exactly what it was. It was the MTV Music Awards, and they came out and sang Will Smith's hit from Wild Wild West, and it was the song we're going to play. He sampled I Wish.
Okay.
Why don't you just give me the stump on that one since I was able to answer it anyway?
Yeah, but I got this one right here.
Oh, so. Fudge. Go ahead.
Rhymes with Judge.
Yeah, it does. Go ahead.
Stevie Wonder performed at the pregame show for Super Bowl 40 in Detroit in early
2006. Oh, I do remember that. Yeah, they had all the Motown guys out
right.
there.
Right, he sang various hit singles. Who played the drums?
Who played the drums for Stevie Wonder? It would
for
have been
this particular show.
It would have been a Motown guy. It would have been a Detroit guy that played the drums, a drummer from Detroit. It's a straight guess. I can't come up with a drummer from Detroit. This is awful that I can't come up with a drummer from Detroit. Dana Carvey. I can't come up with anything.
Stevie's four-year-old son.
Did he really?
Here it is right here.
Are you kidding me?
Black and white.
That's fantastic.
How about that?
That's fantastic. That is fantastic. Speaking of drums.
Yeah.
The song we're about to play, in fact, go ahead and hit it. The song we're playing, when you hear the drums come in, it's Stevie Wonder playing them.
Really?
It really is. This is a clavinet playing the bass part. Listen in the background. The fill is a Hammond B3. I wish those days would come back once more. Rock School. Imagine being a session player for this guy.
Don't mess up.
Don't screw up, man. Oh, that's just fantastic. From Songs in the Key of Life, Stevie Wonder, I Wish Those Days Would Come Back, right more as we talk about the Hammond B3. Let me tell you about something else the Hammond B3 had.
All right.
Organs, full-size pipe organs, have things called stops.
What?
You ever heard the concept, you know, oh, we're going to do something, we're going to pull out all the stops.
Yeah.
When you pulled out all the stops in an organ, what you did is you opened up every hole. So when you push down on a key, the most amount of air possible would blow into the pipes.
Okay, wait, is that like these little tabs that have numbers on them?
That's exactly what you're talking about.
I've seen those. I know what you're talking about.
What the Hammond B3 had was a series of drawbars.
Okay.
And what they would do, depending on whether you had them pushed in, pulled out a little bit, or pulled out the whole way, they would alter the frequency or the octave fundamental frequencies of the note. Now, I know that's a little music theory-y.
Give me an example.
Well, let's say you decided to take the organ and you said, okay, I want to make this organ sound a specific way.
Mm-hmm.
I want to make this organ sound, say, like the organ at a skating park, you know, all skate, that kind of thing. You want to make it sound like that.
Right.
Or you want to make the organ sound like the organ at a baseball game.
Dun,
dun, dun, dun, dun, dun, dun, dun, dun, dun, dun, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
You could use these stops to either amplify or de-amplify, you know, to damp down fundamental frequencies.
Okay.
And you could equal other sounds of other organs.
Cool.
When would that come into play? John Fogerty has a song from the album Center Field, which talks all about baseball.
Mm-hmm.
Well, let's use a Hammond B3 organ and make it sound like, as I said before, the organ at a baseball game.
Okay.
So what they did was use these drawbars to get it to sound like a baseball game. So while this is playing, listen during the chorus. You're going to hear a Hammond B3, but it's going to sound like you're at a baseball game. Dig it. This is John Fogerty on Rock School. And third coming for home. It's a brown-eyed, handsome man.
Nice,
we're going to take a quick pause. We'll tell you about what was considered a design defect in the Hammond B3. The thing about it is, when they decided to fix it, a lot of the people that played the Hammond B3 went, no. We like that.
Don't fix it.
Don't fix that. We like it. We'll be back and tell you what it is in 1 minute on Rock School. One of the big things about the Hammond B3 organ that when it was created, and by the way, it was created in the years 1955 to 1974.
Yeah.
There are other Hammond organs that tried to recreate the sound, but those who really love the organ love those that were made between 1955 and 1974. There was this thing called a key click. When you push the key down, it clicked.
Okay.
It not only clicked, but it bottomed out hard. It caused this audible pop, this audible click, and it was seen as a design defect. And people tried, or those who worked at Hammond, tried to get rid of it using these things like equalization filters and such. And when they tried to get rid of it, people who were actual fans of it went, no, don't get rid of that. We like that. It was kind of made this pop when it hit. The thing about it is it went back to that John Lord article, the sustain, the equality to the guitar, that percussive pop when you created the note for the first time.
Yeah.
So it really is an organ or an instrument that sort of equaled the guitars, which is why it also sat so well inside of heavy metal. Speaking of heavy metal and hard rock, this is one you asked for right at the beginning of the show.
Oh,
Tom
yeah.
Scholz and Boston.
Gotta have this.
This is Foreplay and Long Time. This guy, Tom Scholz, he's got a BA and an MA, a bachelor's and a master's in mechanical engineering from MIT. So he's dumb as a tree stump, obviously. My favorite story of the guy, it just happened a little while ago.
Yeah.
He wrote a letter to Mike Huckabee
asking
him to stop using the song More Than a Feeling because he didn't support him for president. Isn't that wonderful?
Yay!
Absolutely wonderful.
Good for you.
How many of you know the song Foreplay and Long Time?
I do.
You would think, you know, Tom Scholz is such a good guitarist. That's not him playing the Hammond B3, is it? Yes.
Yes, it is.
That's him playing the Hammond B3. Obviously, he can't play both instruments in concert. They bring out a man to play the Hammond B3 in concert. But on record, that's him doing it. Triplets, 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 triplets. And if you listen, you'll hear that key click because he's got one of the original Hammond B3s. Foreplay, Long Time. Here's Boston and the Hammond B3 on Rock School. Tom Scholz, Boston on Rock School, the inventor of the power soak.
You got Brad Delp in there screaming, I'm taking my time, and he is that 7.5 minutes.
Yeah, he did. That's lovely. Absolutely lovely.
I love it, though.
Lovely.
I love it. Sorry.
You know why nobody can actually recreate that sound?
Why?
It's because of that thing, the power soak. Uh-huh. Most people have to get the guitar sound like that. They have to take their amplifiers and turn them up so the tubes in the amplifier will heat up to get that sound. Scholz, being a genius from MIT in mechanical engineering, created this thing that would recreate that sound, but at lower volumes.
So you wouldn't get all the heat.
So you wouldn't have to blow your ears out and all that. And incorporated into an amplifier system called the Scholz Rockman. Oh, it's really
a beautiful
system. I owned one for a little while. It's absolutely a beautiful system. And I'm crushed. I got like 8 more songs to go, but we got to quit. We're out of time.
We can make it a twofer.
Nah, we got to go on. I'm going to do piano next week because I got some beautiful stuff, and I'm looking forward to it.
Cool, man.
Thus ends the Hammond B3 organ show, and I can't thank you all out there enough for joining us. I hope you enjoyed the Hammond B3 show, and I hope you learned a little bit about the instrument so you can listen to a song and look at the person next to you and go, that's a Hammond B3. And they can look back at you and go, I don't care. Because that's what my wife does to me all the time. You know, honey, that's a Scholz power soak. I don't care. We finish with Felix Cavalieri and the Young Rascals. This is Good Lovin' from 1966. It's actually a remake. It was done originally by the Olympics. The Young Rascals changed their name in 1968 to just the Rascals because they were no longer
young.
So there you go. Listen to the keyboard. You'll also hear a solo in the middle. It's done through the Leslie speaker, a little bit of distortion on it because it is a tube speaker, so you were able to use a preamp, turn it up a little bit heavy. It's loud, it's gnarly, it's wonderful. It's a Hammond B3. My name is Joe Burns, you are?
My name is Chad P.
As he tries to equal the Hammond B3 and the Leslie speaker, we're done. Young Rascals from 1966, good love. Class is dismissed.
One, two, three.
Good love. Good love.